Good morning, everyone, and welcome to those that are worshiping online with us at all of our campuses. And if you're a guest today, especially delighted that you're with us in our journey. John, the author of the Gospel of John, has been part of our journey the last several weeks, and he's teaching us to pay attention to God, who He is, and to us, what it means to live by faith. And it's such a beautiful picture that over the course of the year, we're going to stay in John's gospel, but I've got these occasional pauses that are called critical conversations, where John hits a trigger around something that needs a little bit more attention. So last week, we opened up in John 2 with the anger of Jesus, which if you weren't here, I encourage you to go back and listen to that message if you ever wondered how could Jesus be so angry. We gave some perspective to that, but I said it will be a two-part series. We come back the second week and deal with our anger, which is what we're about to do. It's a crucial conversation because all of us get angry, and how we manage it truly does matter, because if we don't manage it well, it's so destructive. And we see it on this continuum from road rage that has become so ever-present to the verbal brawls of our everyday discourse to the rise in abuse and of violence. And so we find that there is much to cover on the subject of anger, and it doesn't take much for us to press the trigger of anger in our time and place. You might recall the story of an incident that happened to Carrie and to me now many years ago, but it's memorable to me to say the least. We were on Baker Road in Eden Prairie, and Carrie was in the right lane needing to get in the left lane, but there was a lot of traffic and congestion. And so she tried to just ease her way in, and she's a great driver. I thought she did a beautiful job. She got into that left lane and kind of pressed herself in a little bit like a Boston driver, I guess, would be, but with more control. I thought it was really well done. But the car behind, that one that she got in front of, didn't think so and was lit up and started honking the horn uncontrollably at her. And I said, just, you know, we're going to get to the light and turn. And then all of a sudden I'm in the passenger seat, and I see in the mirror that the person in agitation pulls out and comes up alongside of us and stops because we're waiting for the light. And I can feel the pressure of this person next to me. And I don't want to look, but I really do. So I do. And the woman is giving me the finger, not the index finger, the other finger, not the kind finger. And I go, whoa. The problem was she was a member of my previous church and a good friend. And the moral of the story is it's just generally not good to give anybody the finger, but not your pastor especially. Please, come on. She was grief-stricken, as you can imagine, and I was a little bit shocked myself, and so I waved. What do you do? What do you do? So, and then as a result of that little exchange, we went our way, she went her way. We got home, and there was a voicemail message from her, as you can imagine. She was a friend, and she was just sick in her stomach. She couldn't get it out of her mind, and she just confessed, and just was feeling so terrible. So I let her be there for a while. I better call her and release her from this thing. I almost said her name. I don't want to say her name. But I just said, you know, it happens. Friends, has it ever happened to you? You just, all of a sudden, here's a Christ follower who just loses it. Have you ever just lost it? We all have moments like this. We do. And I said, listen, I understand. I know you well. I know this isn't your common behavior, but never do that again. No, I didn't say that. I just said, you know, it happens. Be free. Be done. God gives us that capacity to enter into space that otherwise would stir up my anger, and it didn't for either of us, and we've laughed about it many times since. It's the everyday anger that gets us most often. It's our own anger, and it's the anger that we experience in our spaces and places where we live. And I suppose I could say at the beginning of the message, oh, God, help us. Wouldn't you agree? Oh, God, help us. We got anger issues, and we need help, and we need His help. Because we have reversed God's quick, slow, slow remedy for anger, and we've made it a slow, quick, quick remedy. And it's all anchored, that remedy, in a very simple passage in James 1. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. But you can see what we've done. We've been slow to listen, quick to speak, quick to anger. That's our pattern. We take God's remedy and we turn it upside down completely. And so we find the key word in this little passage in terms of managing our own anger is slow. It's to slow. It's what helps produce the right behavior that God desires. And God desires a righteous behavior, a right behavior for this thing called anger in our journey. Let's just back up the truck a little bit here and look at some of the research. Found it fascinating. Wish I could share more of it with you, but a few things that stood out to me. On average, men lose their temper 6 times a week. Women lose their temper 3 times a week. Unless you think that women are less angry than men, it's not true. Women get angrier at people. Men get angrier at things like flat tires and machines and computers. I just hate computers. I know 99% of the time it's human error, but I want to blame the computer for all things. It just exasperates me sometimes. There's a woman by the name of Deb Cox, because she points out that men are more physical with their anger. But she did a research initiative at the University of California, San Francisco, on women and their anger. And she said, quote, "Women may be uncomfortable with feeling angry, but they often act on their anger just as well and often as do men in order to affect change. They just approach it differently." So let's do a little assessment here. Nothing like a good inventory, right? How is your anger today? take a moment. Is there someone that you're angry with or something that you're angry with that's affecting you today? So put that thing or that person just in your mind, okay? You got it? Got the person there? Got the thing there? Psychologists use a tool called the anger scale. It's really quite the deal. It's an assessment that measures a person's anger and helps them then to get to the cause and bring some kind of treatment to help people in anger management. It's really quite complex. I looked at all of the 50 words and the questions and the percentages that they assign, and I realized there's no way in a 30-minute message I can touch this in our given experience. So I just want to encourage you, go see a counselor if you need to go in depth on the scale of anger in your own life, and it's well worth doing it, I'm sure, if you're in that place. But there are other kinds of anger scales that are out there. In fact, preschools have anger scales. I thought that's doable in a 30-minute message. So take the thing or the person you're angry with. Where do you line up on a scale of 1 to 5? And the faces say it all. You could just see a preschool teacher saying to an angry little child, "Are you number 2? Are you number 3?" Along the way. Number 1 is that kind of happy, calm place. I'm doing just fine in the midst of a difficult situation. It moves up to being bothered, to then upset, to being angry. And then number 5 is you're just mad as all get out. And if you're an adult, it's call 911 time, perhaps. It's just out of control. Where are you on that scale of 1 to 5? Do a little self-assessment. And then let's ask the question, how do you most commonly express your anger? There are 5 common ways that I'm going to address just briefly, but you probably land in all 5 or each of them at one point or another, but you lean toward one chronic pattern more than the other. Which one is yours? Let's look at them in brief review. There's the maniac. It's the person who just blows off steam. I mean, the trigger is there. You blow up. This person has a hair-triggered temper. You can throw things. You can cuss. You can yell. It's part of how you deal with it. There's the mute, the person who goes silent. A lot of people just bottle up their anger and they keep it corked inside, which, of course, when you do that, it ferments along the way. You clam up instead of blow up, but your stomach keeps the score and you know it. And then there's the martyr. The martyr is the person who is self-punishing. When something is wrong, you think it's your fault. We don't speak about this kind of anger expression very often, but it's really more common than you think, and it may be you, where you just feel responsible for what took place, and you feel shame and guilt in it, and you struggle to know what to do, and so you tend toward throwing these pity parties. You become kind of the victim of even your own deal, and you get stuck there, and everybody else is made to be miserable again and again and again. You may know someone like that. It may even be you. And then there's the manipulator. This is the person who retaliates. It's the Lee Iacocca version of anger. When he was fired at Ford, he said, "Don't get mad, get even." And that has been the pattern for most of humanity. It's to retaliate. You did this, so I'm coming back at you with this. It's very, very common. And so in this case, it's done in more underhanded ways. That is, you might make somebody late at a project at work to make them look bad because you're so angry. Or you may say that they are a person who isn't going to get the whole truth. They're going to get partial truth because of the reality of what they're dealing with. I don't want them to make a decision with the whole truth. Or you could tease them and just saying, hey, you can't take a joke, can you? When in fact, you've just given them an underhanded stab in the back and everybody in the room doesn't know it, but that person sure knows it. It's the manipulator. And then there's the manager. This is the person who is aware. You seek to deal with it in a helpful way. You want to do it in a way that honors God and brings help and service to others. See, anger is an inescapable fact of life, but the experience of anger is different from the expression of anger. What I do with my anger, how I express it and manage it, is what matters most. And the good news is that we can relearn or unlearn what we learned mostly as children. You'll find that the source of most of your anger expression stems back to those formative years of your childhood and youth. So what I'd like to do is cover three things that you need to understand about anger in order to see healing and hope come in handling it. We're going to look at the goodness of anger and the danger of anger, and then the health of anger through the management of it, how to best manage it. I want to start, though, with the goodness of anger. This is an important start point because I fear most Christians have been taught along the way that they shouldn't be angry or get angry. In fact, in the tradition of families, oftentimes you can call your anger anything but anger. You can say, I'm disappointed. After all, Christians get disappointed. You can say, I'm upset. After all, Christians get upset. You can say, I'm worried. After all, Christians get all worried about things. But you don't find yourself saying the words, I'm angry, because that would be frowned upon. So it's hard to say I'm angry when in fact you are. I'm angry. The writer of Hebrews said, see to it that no one falls short of the grace of God and that no bitter root grows up to cause trouble and to defile many. It means don't deny your anger. That suppression of anger is wrong and can lead to sin as much as blowing up with anger, because it disables grace, the text tells us. That if you let anger simmer and become bitterness, it will disable the power of grace in your life. It will escalate trouble in your relationships and in your surroundings, and it will defile you. That is, it will impair you, that it will create a poison in your system and affect your emotional well-being. So in fact, anger is sometimes required in the biblical teaching and direction. Ephesians 4:26 says it quite simply. It says, be angry, but do not sin. Be angry, but do not sin. And this is a command in the Greek. Be angry. Paul says, be angry, but do not sin. So there needs to be some management of that which is true within us. And it caused me to pause and to think, I'm not so sure that there are any bad emotions. I think we have emotions that go bad, and that's the issue. But that God gives us these emotions for reasons, and the reasons are for good and for healing and for hope, but in fact, we hijack them and use them in ways that are not helpful to us or to others in the journey. So it means that sometimes anger is required, that there are times if you are not angry, that's an issue. It could be wrong and even sin. Tim Keller, who helped me a lot in this piece of what I was seeking to write through a devotional guide that he has, well worth picking it up on wisdom from the Proverbs, speaks about it this way. Anger is aroused in defense of something good and released against something evil. I just love the precision of that. When something good is threatened, it stirs up anger inside. So then the question is, what do I do about it? I think about that last week when we dealt with the anger of Jesus, and we concluded by having a guest from IJM, International Justice Mission, who gave an update of our partnership working to free young boys who are enslaved in the fish industry of Ghana. And he commended the church for our prayers, for our financial giving, for our care and concern about these kids. Well, why are we? Because we have this anger. We know it's unjust what's happening to this kid. And we can't do justice to all the wrongs in the world, but we can make a difference here or there. And we're responding to that. And it's our anger that causes us to love and to give and to help in the way that we can. We're defending something good. So we're glad for good anger that causes someone to defend something that is good, but finds itself threatened. So we should be angry sometimes. Be angry, but do not sin. And we find the goodness of anger in the essence of God's very character. Anger is an attribute of God. We know that anger is true of God, therefore it cannot in and of itself be a sin. In fact, we find that Moses meets God on the mountain, and he wants to know, who are you, Lord? He wants to know him better, and he says, who are you? And in Exodus 34:6, we get this response, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands and forgiving wickedness, rebellion, and sin, yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. What a dance God has, and what a beautiful picture that you have here. He is the God who loves. He is also the God who rightly deals with those who are guilty of injustice, but he says, I am the Lord, your God, slow to anger. Oh, when we give thanks to God for who he is. We always talk about his love and his faithfulness, include his anger, that is motivated out of this context of love. In fact, he says, I am the Lord, slow to anger. I get angry, but I'm slow to anger. So the ideal that is stated in the Bible is not no anger or blowing up kind of anger, but it is slow anger. He's teaching us to pay attention to what rises up within us and what we then are going to do about it. A wise person is slow anger, and slow anger is how God is. And I get somebody might want to take argument with me right now and say, you know, Joel, I believe in a God of love, not a God of anger. I know this because every time I would teach on the wrath of God, I get emails and phone calls of frustrated people because it wrecks their image of who God must be. He is a God of love, not a God of anger, I hear. But if you have a God who never gets angry, you can't have a God of love. Because if you love and you see the thing that you love threatened, it stirs up anger. And if you're indifferent, you have to question how much you truly love. The 4th century teacher and spiritual leader John Chrysostom really puts a positive light of the biblical teaching on this so well. He says, he who is angry without cause sins. He who is not angry, whereas he has cause to be, sins. For unreasonable patience is the hotbed of many vices. They work together. I think that's a good start point. Not all anger is wrong. It may, in fact, be good, but I can tell you from the whole of the biblical teaching on anger that anger is dangerous. The words of Scripture tells us that God is, I think, suspicious of our capacity to handle well the anger that rises up in us. Let me just give you a few examples. Just listen. Colossians 3:8. But now you must rid yourselves of such things as these: anger, rage, malice, slander, filthy language from your lips. Or Ephesians 4:31. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling, and slander, along with every form of malice. Or Galatians 5:19. The acts of sinful nature are obvious: hatred, and discord, and jealousy, and fits of anger. And I could go on and on with other scriptural teaching here that there is a danger to anger. It's a dynamite in our soul, and dynamite explodes, it pulverizes, it crushes, it demolishes the things that are sometimes most loved in our culture and in our journey. Let me give you a few examples of them. Your body deteriorates because of anger. Research shows anger weakens your immune system. I got a little lost in my reading of articles and research on the effects of anger and the variety of health problems. Matter of fact, I was a little overwhelmed, like headaches, skin problems, digestion issues, insomnia, increased anxiety, depression, high blood pressure, strokes. It goes on and on and on. I just, well, wow, maybe I need to take a step back and ask the question, what is it that I'm most dealing with in my life? Is anger fueling my health issues, or is it something else? See, anger is harder on your body and heart than anxiety is, or sorrow is, or any other emotion that you could identify. In fact, one article indicated that chronic anger, listen to this, triples your risk for a heart attack. triples it. Wow. Nothing rots your bones like anger, according to Proverbs 14. Whoever is patient has great understanding, but one who is quick-tempered displays folly. A heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones. The scripture says it has health effects. Our health suffers, and then secondly, your relationship deteriorates as well. When you get angry, words can get spoken that are really like weapons that bring harm to your relationships and strain them. In fact, what happens is that it creates distance between you and other people, some who are very close to you. That distance eventually becomes detachment, and it's hard to even be in the presence of the person. And sometimes you can never get those relationships back again. Proverbs 15:18. A hot-tempered person stirs up conflict, but the one who is patient calms a quarrel. We're just escalating all the time conflict due to our anger rather than de-escalating it with calm perspective and leaning into it a little bit more. Ephesians 4:26 again, be angry, but do not sin. Do not let the sun set on your anger, and do not leave room for the devil. Whoa, we just added a layer there, a texture of color that's really profound if you sit in it long enough. Be angry, but deal with it as soon as possible. I don't know that you have to do it literally. Some believe that you should interpret that text to say immediately do it. Sometimes that's not feasible, but I think the principle is do not let this thing sit long. It will create other issues along the way, because if you don't deal with it right away, you're going to carry it around. It's going to break down communication in other places, things that weren't even part of the original offense. So let me use just an analogy that I think you'll all resonate with and understand in this season of what we're living through in Minnesota, that anger is like potholes. Now, isn't that a fitting analogy? Okay, we're all going to land this one. That you keep driving on the lane, the main lane of your relationships, and then something happens and a pothole forms. And you know that it's there and you do everything you can to begin to avoid it, because the thawing and the cooling effect around that pothole begins to then crack and bring other potholes that you have to navigate on that given lane of your relationship. And you feel the vulnerability of it. It makes annoying on that. It makes it to be annoying in your spirit to drive on that same lane. And you know that it's dangerous as well, but also could be destructive. So before long, without intending it to happen, you lose sight of the trigger to the first expression of anger. What created that very first pothole that you began to drive around and never gave attention to? And now there are potholes everywhere. And you find that the repairs are expensive. And it takes a long time. And it's hard to get back to the original pothole. When I teach on anger management, I have a fairly well-defined system, and I can't go through all of it. It all comes out of Matthew 18. But the core of it is what I call the funnel effect of managing our conflict. And you think about a funnel that takes us down into the core of what's most important. And that's what you have in the funnel effect, is sometimes the main thing, we lose it. We forget the first pothole, and we give our energy to all the other side potholes, the peripheral issues, and it creates havoc for us. So we don't give energy to the most important thing. We never patch the first pothole, and the result is sometimes it brings all kinds of unnecessary changes, more time, more money than ever you could dream. So when something happens today and you don't deal with it, it becomes a week, and then you don't deal with it, it becomes a month, and then eventually it becomes a year. You never deal with it. You start to look for a change of scenery. And when you look for a change of scenery, when you have too many potholes that you're looking at on the road of your relationship, you look for back roads to take you where you want to go. And you begin to think this way. If I could just get out of this friendship, I'll be okay. If I could just get out of this marriage, it would be okay. If I could get out of this job, if I could get out of this neighborhood, it would be okay. And eventually over time, because I never went back to the original pothole, I find myself with a different friend and a different marriage and a different job and a different neighborhood. If you haven't resolved anger and patched the first pothole, then you leave people and places and you carry that anger around with you into the next chapter. And the text says, and do not give the devil a foothold. that most anger is going to invite the devil. We don't think of it that way. We think of it in terms of human flesh, but there's a battle of principalities and of powers of the unseen world, and our anger opens up. It's the Achilles heel to our soul, letting the devil in. And what that means is that we are no longer letting God be the compass of our lives, that he pulls us off the path and he takes us down to dark alleyways into places we don't belong, because his number one strategy is to pull you away from God and pull you into the world that is around us. That's what he does. And then third, your judgment deteriorates. It disintegrates your judgment, your ability to know what to do, where to go, what to say, and how to say it. Proverbs 14:29, whoever is patient has great understanding, but one who is quick-tempered displays folly. Have you ever found yourself in a place where you've expressed the anger maybe more forcefully than you ought have, and by the time you cool off and you start to think of what you said and you did, and you're a little surprised by what came out of your mouth and what you said and you did, and you feel kind of foolish about it? Why do you feel foolish about it? Because you were foolish. Your decisions were foolish decisions that led to destructive choices. So how can our anger be healed and better managed? How is it that we can recover God's quick, slow, slow remedy for anger and the management of it? Well, I will tell you, and I'm going to be honest on this deal, I really struggled on closing this message out. I had a hard time landing the plane. I wrote my ending 3 different times. It was so difficult, and part of it is because of you. And I'm grateful for this, but it created some tension for me as well. Last week, I said that I would give energy to anger in terms of our human relationships. And because many of you knew I was doing that, I received a number of emails about anger, you either being victims of anger or dealing with anger with the hope that I would speak to this or that. And all of a sudden, I felt these huge expectations around the message of anger, and I got overwhelmed, and I just thought, okay, this is a good time just to end. So if we could just be done now and I could benedict you, see ya. I'd feel good about it. And then I realized, you know this, I can't be prescriptive in terms of your given situation. I can't. I can give you some global truths. And the one that's most important, this is where I landed, I am going to land the plane, I'm not going to benedict quite yet, is that you need to have a heart transformation and anger management. That you don't have in and of yourself the power to bring about the change to manage the anger that rises up. We need a heart transformation. And Jesus is in the heart transformation business. It's what he does. We really need the help of God. And as we step into a relationship with God through faith, he gives us the Holy Spirit, who gives us the fruit of the Spirit, which includes self-control and patience. You know, for the longest time in my early Christian journey, I always would say, I'm an impatient person. I've always been an impatient person. I just have this urgency all the time. And then I began to be convicted around that, because one of the fruit of the Spirit is patience, and one of them is self-control. So do I get to say, I'm going to be this way when Jesus is in me? Everything that I need to be patient and have self-control is already in me through faith. I get to choose to live in that or not live in that. And so that's the invitation, let your heart be transformed. You have to have a relationship, I think, with God to do that. So let me just briefly give you a triple A strategy that I just reference here. First of all, admit your anger. Be quick to listen begins by listening to yourself. The message that it's not appropriate to be angry has confused us far too long. No, we are called to know it, to be in touch with it, and to know the scope of our anger. And yes, it's vulnerable to confess that you are angry about something or somebody has triggered anger in you, but we need to admit it or we'll be controlled by it. Secondly, the second A is to analyze your anger. We have an acronym that we've used around here for a lot of years, HALT, H-A-L-T, when you're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, you're most susceptible to give in to temptation. Slow means to follow the resistance. Halt, stop, pay attention, follow the resistance. I have this, for 20 years, I've had this little metaphor in my head, this picture of a thread that's tied to my brain, to my tongue, to my throat, down into my gut. And when I find myself in a situation and there's emotions rising up, anger rising up within me, it comes and lands in my throat. I don't know if it does for you. It wants to come out immediately, but I can feel it rising. And so then I've learned to halt and to stop and to pay attention and to ask questions. And I think of this thread and I go, this is the question I ask. Why am I feeling so defensive right now? Why is that? What is causing and stirring it? And then I begin to ask questions that get me to the core of what might be stirring it up. And sometimes what makes you angry in this process, you begin to learn, is not what's happened to you, but how you think something has happened to you. And so you ask, why am I so defensive? And all of a sudden you see that the thing that you're defending is your ego. It's your reputation. It's your self-esteem. It's your need to be right, that you're really defending you. And that's a piece of the learning. That's why we slow. And so to ask complicated questions is part of getting to the root. And once we do, not only do we see our contribution to the conflict, but we begin to see if we truly have been wronged, and we can begin to name it. It could be acknowledgement or opportunity or acceptance or belonging or safety. You put words to it and you name the awful behaviors as clueless or the wrongs that have been done to you, and you start to know then how to step into it. And just briefly, the third is the righteousness of God desires a third day, and that is to aim your anger at blessing. Now I'm just going to tell you, you don't like this because there's nothing in you that wants to do this. It just doesn't. To do what? Well, we're told so clearly in Romans, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Okay, when you're angry, who wants to do that? Nobody. Who helps you to do that? God. That's why we step into it that way. It's a surgical strike. Don't simply not revenge enemies, redeem them. And how is that possible? It's through the mark of God who is in us. That's the one who gives us strength to be able to pray for our enemies, for those who oppose us, to be able to do good and bring kindness to them out of love. It's a call to reflect on the cross. Not as a historical fact, friends, not at all. It's easy for us to think, oh, I can't believe all that happened to Jesus that put him onto that cross. But what happened to him was us. It was our sin. We contributed as well. We're the ones who mocked him. We're the ones who beat him. Our anger is the reflection of what tortured him and caused him to go to the cross. And he absorbed the rage of humanity and the anger of humanity on Calvary's cross. He took our anger, which he didn't deserve, but he also took the anger that we did deserve, and he did it without paying back. In fact, he did it with the gentlest of words. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. It's only then to be undone by the cosmic gentleness of God in our lives that we can do the same. It's only then, as we get in touch with him, that we understand freedom, that ego needs are not there when you have the love of God. Our defensiveness rises up because we're usually defending something about ourselves. So this week, every time you get thwarted, and you'll be thwarted many times with anger rising up, use it as an opportunity to hand your will over to God and say, God, your will be done, not mine. Your will be done, not mine. Your will be done, not mine. He will help you. He'll bring healing help to your anger and its management. It's something to sit in for a while, I know. But our time is done, so stand. And let's sing together and pray first before we go. Lord, we know this to be true, that hot heads and cold hearts never solve anything. So make us like you, slow to anger. Absorbing anger with the peace of Christ is not natural to us, but through your presence, you teach us a new way in a world that is so upset every hour of every day. You've called us to be light, hope, calm, and to bring peace. Well, it begins with you. So be with people in their places of anger, for those who are victims of anger, and give us new ways to think about and manage that which is rising up within. Make us like Jesus in all we say and do, to your glory. Amen.